Hello everyone, welcome to episode 5 of the Pocket Gamer.biz podcast, a regular roundup of the global mobile games market and deep dive into the issues that matter to you, whatever your role and wherever you are. One of the best parts about starting this podcast has been getting your feedback, hearing your thoughts and getting your ideas about the companies and people you want to hear from. Who's out there that you'd like us to talk to? And what areas of the whole wide world of mobile games should we talk about next? As always, you can reach us online. You can email us, podcast@pocketgamer.biz, or reach us via Twitter using our @PGBiz account. I'm Brian Baglow, Managing Editor of pocketgamer.biz, bringing some smooth Scottish charm to your week, along with more than 20 years of experience in the mobile games industry. Yes, I remember well the full page ads for polyphonic ringtones and Java games, and trust me, these days are better. And joining me this week are John Jordan, our contributing editor, blockchain champion and industry expert. Hello, John.
Hello, Brian. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Not bad. And yourself? Another big week in the world of mobile gaming.
Yes. Lots going on as ever.
So one of the things we like to do is give you a flavour of what's been coming across our desks, appearing in our inboxes. In the last few weeks, let's be honest, it's been all about Apple. The world's favourite tech giant recently received the initial judgment in its ongoing legal wrangle with Epic Games and announced a whole new raft of iPhones, iPads, updates and general stuff. So John, where are we at with the legal battle and the opening up of the app stores?
I have to say, whenever the long lawsuit is kicked off, I sort of inwardly groan, having sort of covered these. I think when you start off as a sort of like a cub reporter, you're like really excited that you know, Epic suing Apple in this case. Well, I remember back in the day when basically all the hardware companies were suing each other. These Samsung, Nokia, Apple, Qualcomm, basically everyone sued everyone.
I remember it well.
Yeah, it's got a really exciting to begin with, and then over time, you sort of realise it's going to go on forever, and then you sort of come to the conclusion that basically nothing's going to change. Like, maybe someone will give someone some money at some point. I think what was interesting was, obviously, the judge kind of put forward her conclusions in a 150-page document. Everyone jumped on sort of one paragraph and decided that Apple had sort of lost. And even Tim Sweeney sort of put out a tweet saying, not happy because they'd lost on like 9 of the 10 counts, but we're going to appeal and everything. So I think it's still fairly unclear. I am clearly no legal expert. Some legal experts have gone quite conservative on this, I think.
Yeah.
And they've sort of come to the conclusion that actually very little has changed, saying that Apple, at worst, will have to link out to how you can get these things cheaper on other platforms, which is not the same thing as having a button inside your Apple app. Which basically says you can buy things cheaper using this. What's more interesting is Apple, across the board and in various jurisdictions, is seeing a lot of sort of pushback from regulators. So we've had some stuff in Japan about reader apps, which is a very specific Japanese thing about sort of manga comics. We've had stuff in South Korea about kind of what could be done there. And overall in the US as well, in California, I think we've had some stuff. Everywhere Apple is sort of under pressure on the App Store.
Very true. I mean, we're seeing small cracks appear in the wall around the garden, maybe. As you say, some of the specifics in particular regions or for particular app types, you know, are not going to rock the boat too much, but it might demonstrate that actually they can be a little more flexible. They can ease up on the control side of things without losing what makes the App Store, you know, so beloved. Maybe beloved is a bit strong. Popular is probably better. But of course, we also had the recent semi-annual Apple launch with a whole new raft of iPhones, a new iPad and so on. Now, as somebody who was glued to some of the very early ones of these when they introduced the iPad, when they had the new generation of MacBooks, you know, for me this time round and for the last few, it's been very much business as usual. We're not seeing an awful lot of innovation. We're not seeing any disruption. You know, are those days gone, or do you think Apple still has the capacity to delight and surprise?
Yeah, very similar sort of attitude. I remember I actually went in person to one once, and it was even when Steve Jobs was alive. And I have to say, even that was the most boring 2 hours I've ever spent, because it literally was
all around the world. Apple fanboys are.
It was sort of interminable, really. They just go on and on and on about these, and you just kind of think, how can any sane human being take this tiny feature upgrade seriously? But I think, you know, in general, it's not just Apple. You know, no one would ever sit through a Samsung sort of press conference about their new devices, but it'd be the same thing. You know, it's incremental improvements now. But innovation clearly is still there, so it just moves on. Once you've got a bit of hardware called a smartphone, it's going to get better every year, but it's not going to be anything massive. But clearly we're going to have things around AR glasses. I guess even we had Facebook with its Ray-Ban announcement. Even with foldable devices now, which you think about the technology of a foldable device, I mean, that's incredible, really. How, you know, Samsung, you know, is on to their third one already, third kind of iteration of foldable devices, and they're now clearly much better than they were, and that's not really changed the market. People aren't rushing out to buy foldable phones.
We're not seeing the implantable stuff or the, you know, the radical disruption that that we had in the past. But the other thing we also need to talk about in this episode is China. Since we last spoke, the country announced a series of restrictions aimed at limiting the amount of time children and young people can play games, online games, an hour a day at weekends and on holidays. Quite a bold move, and it's triggered a fairly mixed reaction around the world, with some people predicting that this is going to leave China leagues behind when it comes to issues like esports and online education, and others saying actually it's quite sensible. What's your take, John?
I think it's incremental again, really. It has to be seen in sort of context. So over the last really couple of years, we've seen the CCP sort of take issue with games specifically. We'll talk about maybe a bit about some of the other things they're doing. But really, there's been pressure on under 18-year-olds playing games for a number of years now. And, you know, broadly, we should say that in other Asian countries, there have been not the same level of restrictions. But, you know, in Japan, years ago, they sort of limited how much under 18-year-olds can pay, not play, how much they can pay. South Korea similarly had some rules, which actually they've just rescinded. But clearly, China is... It's not worried about games, per se. It's clearly worried about what the next generation of Chinese are growing up like. And clearly, they think they shouldn't be spending all their free time playing games. Quite what they should be doing, hard to say, because they've also sort of banned computer-based education systems as well. There's been a similar sort of level of restriction going on, as we've seen with games, which would seem kind of weird, because you think if they want people to stop playing games, they'd like them to actually be doing outside school work, but it seems to be not quite the case. I don't think we'd probably get too wound up on the gaming side, but clearly, as you say, it will have quite big consequences, I think. Not in terms of the immediate kind of value of the Chinese games market, although games companies have seen their share price hit a lot. You know, I think NetEase was down 35%, 10 cents, yeah, something similar. And these are big companies, so they've been billions of dollars wiped off their market value. But it's only about 3%. I think Tencent has always said it's about 3% of its revenue comes from under 18. So clearly that's sort of under pressure now. What you sort of lose over time is if under 18-year-olds aren't playing games, then probably they end up doing something else instead of playing games, and probably that weakens gaming as a sort of a hobby. That would be the sort of, you know, logical conclusion, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as you say, that will have very specific consequences for esports teams. There is this interesting argument that some people have said that this is specifically to online games, or at least that's what has been the English translation. So potentially stuff like offline games or hyper-casual games may be outside of these restrictions. So maybe you could play hyper-casual games as much as you want, sort of thing. Some other people have said maybe they'll just, Chinese youth will just be much more on streaming platforms now, because obviously they're not games.
And also, you know, one of the questions that came, or one of the responses, I should say, that came out through our Mobile Mavens piece when we reached out to a whole series of founders, business leaders and experts across the mobile sector to ask for their response to this was, well, where do you draw the line between games and education? Because, of course, games are no longer just about mere entertainment. There's more and more opportunities out there to play something, use something, which has educational value. And, you know, during lockdown, it became clear that more and more schools and seats of education are looking for ways to engage with their pupils, with their students. Do you think that could have a profound impact? It seems as though it could limit opportunities for learning using some of the different platforms and services out there which are getting traction.
Yeah, but I think there's already been some sort of restrictions around pure educational online services. So they don't care. it's the sort of answer to that. I think the CCP is trying to reposition Chinese society around what they call it. It's a phrase, isn't it? It's socialism with Chinese characteristics or something. There's a sort of famous phrase that they use. That's what the reset is.
There's a much, much bigger context here. But anyway, moving on, it would be remiss of us not to mention the other big story for us is the launch of a brand new website in the Pocket Gamer family. As we record the podcast, the beyondgames.biz site is going live. And this is something entirely new, focusing on all of the ways in which digital and interactive media are transforming nearly every aspect of our creative world, from film, TV and screen to music, marketing, and of course the metaverse. Beyond Games is going to be your guide to the converged future. And this is something that John and I had a hand in. We had the very first event earlier this year. And this is going to be something a little bit different, a little bit special.
Yeah, I think it's an idea that's sort of been kicked around for well over a year now, really. As you say, sort of gaming technology is going everywhere now. It's sort of leaking, and it has been for a while, but, you know, been leaking into other industries. But I think now technology is so powerful and so easy to use that gaming tech is kind of foundation for many, if not all, creative industries, at least ones that are using sort of interactive kind of elements. So I think Beyond Games is just sort of a way of trying to capture all this sort of stuff. And I think a lot of the sites we've worked on have been very specific to the sort of platforms. So obviously, kind of Pocket Gamer, we sort of know what we're covering with there, and, you know, blockchaingamer.biz, we know what we're covering with there, and some of the other ones we've done have been quite specific. I think Beyond Games is a much more sort of fluid attempt to capture what's going on. We'll be seeing a lot more kind of user-generated content, a lot more sort of cross-platform, a lot more co-op sort of stuff. As you mentioned before, a lot of stuff in education. But now, obviously, we have big tech, like big AI platforms sort of coming in. Got the sort of cultural side where it's, you know, games obviously being used in sort of marketing, music, film, TV, fashion is another big one. So all that kind of stuff is a big melting pot. So we're basically chucking it all in a website and seeing what we can cook up, I suppose.
Well, this is it. You know, it's games has broken out. It's no longer a specific type of experience played on a specific platform that only does that one thing. You know, games are now ubiquitous. Anything with a screen and some processing power plays games, along with apps, along with social media, along with everything. And the tools used for making games are now being used in so many other places. You know, the game engines, Unity and Unreal, for example, are being used really widely in the screen industries with virtual production and real-time production. They're also being used by dance troupes and theatre companies, you know, to create sets and virtual experiences. And we're, of course, seeing the ongoing evolution of immersive technologies in a lot of different ways. So I think it's going to be really exciting, because games can have a tendency to be a little bit insular, maybe a little bit inward looking. And so looking out beyond games, looking outwards, I think can really help to showcase what games as a transformative technology has to offer the rest of the world, rather than just let's blow shit up in ever more photorealistic detail.
It's true. Good encapsulation, Brian.
Let's move on to this week's guests. Today we are taking a deep dive into the world of app monetization. Yes, we're exploring all of the ways in which developers and publishers can make money out of the games they release, and how that's changing rapidly. We spoke to Imran Khan, the Europe, Middle East and Africa sales lead from Facebook Audience Network, who helped take us through some recent research that the company has carried out, looking at this topic and how it's changing from now up until 2025. So let's hear what Imran had to say. Welcome, Imran. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you here. First of all, can you tell us a bit more about how you came to be where you are now?
Thanks for having me, Brian. Looking forward to the discussion that we're going to have over this podcast. Yeah, so how did I come to where I am today? So interesting, right? So as a child, grew up playing video games, whether that was on the Mega Drive or the Super Nintendo and later the PlayStation. I guess I'm showing my age now, but it's all good. Who knew that I would get to a point in my career where I would make a living from helping video game developers and publishers be able to effectively monetize and grow their business through the gaming sector? So that's really a privilege for me, you know, being able to take something that I had in childhood and being able to affect it in adulthood. But in general, I've kind of worked in the media and ad tech landscape for over a decade, I'd say. And I think this was just a natural progression for me, this role at Facebook Audience Network, which really speaks to what I love doing from a career and business perspective, but also matches up with, you know, stuff I've loved doing as a child and bringing that to others.
Wonderful. And I think there are a few of us who go that far back into the prehistoric era of video games, where, you know, it used to cost you money to go to a video arcade, or the era of where the consoles first entered the home. But let's move up to today. What can you tell us about the report that's come out? How was it compiled, the methodology, and who was involved in its creation?
Yeah, great question, Brian. So we spoke to around 25 thought leaders from across the industry, including ad tech business executive, industry analysts, game publishers, peers at Facebook and other leaders in the space. And that was really to understand the perspective on app monetization future and their recommendations for building sustainable monetization solutions into games now. So, for example, we spoke to folks from Mopub, from AppLovin, from Chartboost, great game developers at Zynga and Glee Mobile, Deconstructor of Fun, Newzoo, and a number of others, and also thought leaders within the Facebook audience network, of course. And as a result, we've had robust set of recommendations.
That's amazing. Some really familiar names in there that we cover on an ongoing basis. So really, you accessed the best minds in the industry.
Yeah, that's right.
So what did you find? Can you share some of the significant shifts that are transforming monetization in that world now and in the next few years?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to dig into that. So I think let's get started by talking a bit about the current state of app monetization. So for game publishers specifically, what we're seeing is the accelerated shifts to bidding and hybrid monetization, which were predicted in 2022. And what we're now seeing is that they're playing out globally and across platforms. So today, bidding is not just a priority, but I'd say it is really an imperative for any app monetization business. And what you're going to see beyond 2021 is that you'll need to be on bidding to monetize efficiently and effectively.
Just to be very clear, when you talk about bidding, what exactly do you mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm sure a lot of your listeners will also be familiar with what bidding is, but for those who aren't, I'll clarify. So let me first cover what happened before bidding. I think that will be a useful context for your listeners, which was waterfall mediation. So with waterfall mediation, ad networks got ranked according to historical CPMs, not by who is offering the most per ad impression. So what that did is it limited competition. So mobile game publishers and developers were not receiving the best return for their ad inventory. But what we saw with app bidding is that we have open real-time auctions between ad networks and other demand sources, which enables more competition among ad buyers where the highest bidder wins. And what this results in is more revenue to publishers and developers for each ad impression served to players in their mobile games. And this is great for publishers because instead of spending time, you know, checking price floors across multiple countries and maintaining waterfalls, which is a huge tax on the teams at the other publishers and developers, you can now see every placement that applies to every country and every user seamlessly. And so what that means is that there's more time to focus on a holistic ad strategy. You're just saving a huge amount of time, which you can spend testing different, for example, rewarded video entry points and the frequency of those ads, for example. So, yeah, there's a huge both cost saving, operational saving that comes with bidding for publishers.
That makes so much sense because we're seeing a huge acceleration in almost every aspect of user acquisition and monetization. Developers and publishers are now having to deal with multiple campaigns on multiple channels for multiple games. So having that real-time data and automated approach is clearly going to simplify a very complex and crucial part of any game, which may have a relatively brief life cycle. You also mentioned the shift to hybrid monetization. Can you elaborate on that any?
Yeah, because this term may not be familiar to many, although it is growing in popularity. So like bidding, what we're seeing is many forward-thinking publishers have gradually shifted to a hybrid monetization model over the past few years. What we saw historically was that publishers typically used to monetize primarily through in-app purchases, which I'm sure you're familiar with, right? And what we've seen is we've seen success stories in every genre where our game publishers and developers get positive results on retention and revenue when they built ads into the games from the start. So essentially, they're balancing in-app purchases and in-app ads, and this is now widely accepted and recommended by many analysts. So some examples of publishers on Facebook Audience Network are companies like Malsoft and GeeSmart. They've integrated ad monetization alongside IP from the design stage, and this has really helped them scale beyond small in-game purchasing groups and building a more balanced in-game economy. And so what we've seen is with this more holistic approach, publisher teams are bringing monetization, acquisition, and development plans to collaborate in a more integrated way, which can only be more positive and more profitable for publishers in the long term.
That's very interesting because, again, within the editorial team, within a lot of the events that we run, we're seeing a huge amount of interest from developers and publishers exploring alternative ways to monetize their games. Can you share with us some of the innovations you see happening maybe in 2022 and beyond?
Absolutely. This is where it starts to get exciting. And I think some of the themes I touched on earlier really is about building the essential plumbing and infrastructure. But what we're going to see in 2022, so overall, innovation will drive greater value across the player, publisher, and advertiser ecosystem. We'll continue to see growth in in-game revenue. What we're seeing, in fact, is IDC forecasts a compound annual growth rate of 17% for mobile game revenue. What that means is more money going to publishers this year and in the future. Within app ad revenue forecast to be more than $53 billion in 2024. And what we'll see moving forward as well, we're going to see more quality ads. So the ad experience is going to increase and the quality of those ads is going to improve as businesses are incentivized to provide more positive ad experiences for players. And what we're going to see by 2022, better creatives as advertisers seek to understand better what players are looking for inside the game and what motivates them to play.
Everything we're seeing across the whole mobile ecosystem is pointing towards growth. The number of players, the hours being played, the revenue being generated, and the funding and investment flowing into mobile games really speaks for itself.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you've just said there. What's also interesting is that games will also get more social as developers build more live ops features into their games on both mobile and cloud. So what we're seeing is that this transition from mobile to cloud is another shift worth noting. We're seeing more publishers and developers building instant game on the Facebook platform. What these are, just for clarity for your listeners, is these are no download HTML5 based games that you can play directly from the Facebook platform. And what this helps and enables is a seamless transition to cloud gaming because they allow more people to play deeper and more graphically rich games instantly. This shift is enabling a highly social and interactive app-based experience across multiple platforms. What it also does is it opens the potential for integration of in-game rewards and purchases across both cloud and mobile. So what we're seeing is a convergence of different ecosystems, right? So whether that's native app, HTML5, and cloud games, we're seeing this merge. People will then have more immersive experiences, and monetization will converge across mobile and online platforms. And as one of my colleagues in product management, Vivek Sharma, he commented that, you know, applet, cloud, and eventually VR will merge, and people will be able to have deeply immersive experience with radical interactivity, and that various forms of monetizations will converge across mobile and online platforms, which I find super compelling. So a player might access in-app purchases in the same game on both the cloud platform and in-app, and then publishers see more dollars for every dollar spent.
Cloud gaming has been on our radar for some time, but it's been received with skepticism by some quarters of the industry. However, it is going to happen. It is happening. We're already seeing the infrastructure and the models being accepted for movies, music, etc. It offers so many opportunities to developers and publishers to reach new players and give their whole catalogue or portfolio a new lease of life. So it's really exciting to hear that you've identified it as such a significant new opportunity. Are there any other trends that you think our listeners should be aware of?
Sure, definitely. And what we're going to see in 2022 and beyond, we see more creative ad opportunities for brands. We expect people to have highly personal engagement with brands and publishers in virtual and augmented reality environments that incorporate gaming, entertainment, commerce, and social experiences. You may have heard Facebook is now a metaverse company. And also today, as we're recording this, there's an announcement that will be happening between Ray-Ban and Facebook, which will be really exciting. So by the time this podcast comes out, I think we'll be able to talk about it in more detail. But I just wanted to share something that Ben Chen, who's an executive VP of Tapjoy, gave us a really exciting example of this. So consider the type of immersive advertising experience where you test drive a Corvette with an Oculus Quest and download an NFT after as a reward. So really, it's the future is super exciting.
I couldn't agree more. It's really creative stuff. So given all these innovations and, you know, the future looming ahead of us, what should app developers, publishers and marketers be doing right now to prepare for this future?
Top two recommendations from our thought leaders are shift from waterfall to app bidding. This is really essential to effectively monetize your ad inventory moving forward. And, you know, diversify your revenue streams, both across in-app ads and in-app purchases. And as you plan for 2022, what we do really do is suggest focusing on three areas. So efficiency, engagement, and ad strategy. And what I'll do for the benefit of your listeners is just highlight a few pointers. But what you can do is access a more comprehensive list of all the recommendations in the full report from fb.me/AMIO. That's fb.me/AMIO, A-M-I-O. So just to touch on those three recommendations. So efficiency. So what you want to do is first make sure your iOS implementations are sound. So for example, your SK Ad Network SDK. Bring your monetization, acquisition, and development teams together. Automate wherever possible, such as with automated app ads, where machine learning and automated ad placements can help you acquire users. If we move on to engagement, the second area of recommendation is to focus on this. Build trust with consumers by focusing on quality. Also, be sure to include retention building formats like rewarded video and social features to help reach your audience beyond your game. And lastly, ad strategy. So refine your ad strategy by building non-personalized ad experiences and leveraging format innovations. And overall, you know, consider monetization and UA as a loop, reinvesting to grow your game.
That's really valuable information, Imran. Thank you. Given what you've shared about current and upcoming shifts in monetization, these are really, really valuable pieces of data. But what solutions are available to help gaming companies build, monetize, and indeed grow?
Yeah, great question, Brian. Super important and timely. Well, what I can share is, you know, on Facebook and Audience Network, what publishers can do. So number one, you know, you can monetize your games with in-app ads on Facebook Audience Network, which provides high-value ad formats and access to our global Facebook demand. Also, with other Facebook solutions, gaming businesses can also build instant games, so HTML5 games, that are playable on any device, along with building games, cloud games on Facebook's cloud infrastructure. They can also grow their game with cloud playables, using a try before you install experience to reach more qualified new players. And lastly, we also have something called automated app ads. And what these do is they improve user acquisition and drive results for your app install ads. So we have a number of strategies and solutions and tools that publishers on the Facebook Audience Network can use to help them grow their business.
That is a lot of great information. Our audience is going to have to spend quite a lot of time, and they have a lot to think about there. And it gives them so many different new ways to monetize their app now and over the next 4.5 years. So to recap, publishers are likely to see greater efficiency and returns with app bidding. Yeah. Publishers of all genres will continue to develop innovative ways of balancing in-app purchases and ads in a hybrid monetization mix. Gaming marketers will see industry advancements in measurement and creatives. We're going to see more quality ads as businesses are incentivized to provide positive ad experiences for players. And games will get more social as developers build more live ops features into their games on mobile and cloud. And as for what publishers should focus on looking forward, it's the three that you just mentioned: optimizing efficiency, building engagement with players, and refining their ad strategy. Sadly, however, I think we could go on all afternoon, but we are just about out of time for this episode. Imran, thanks so much for joining us today and walking us through these predictions and recommendations. It has been fascinating.
You're welcome, Brian. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, Imran. Well, that was quite incredible. We'd like to thank Imran and Facebook Audience Network for taking the time to talk to us. So, John, from what Imran was saying, it's clear that monetization landscape is changing. And it's always been an area that has caused some companies a little bit of problem, you know, from free to play all the way through to in-game advertising. It's always been, in some cases, a bit of an afterthought, but it's clear that moving forward, developers and publishers are going to have to pay ever more attention to this area and really start to incorporate this from the outset into what it is they're making.
Yeah, and I think as you say, over the years, monetization has become a sort of key element of game design. So, you know, I guess still the purest game designers who want to sit down in an ivory tower with a sheet of paper and design the perfect game, kind of fine. I guess there are still opportunities to do that, although massively diminished. I think now, really, you know, when you're thinking about a game, you're thinking about, you know, obviously key things, what genre, what sort of characters, what sort of art style, you know. But into that, you're thinking about metagame loops. You're thinking about how are you going to monetize? Is that going to be mainly through in-app purchases? Is that mainly going to be through advertising? But increasingly, having the ability for people to spend tens of thousands of dollars in your game, clearly knowing that there's going to be a small number of individuals who are going to have the ability to do that, but giving them that opportunity. And then also thinking about the 98% or whatever of people who are never going to buy anything in your game and how you monetize them, which is clearly advertising. And as advertising gets ever more sophisticated, then there's sort of, you know, more interesting ways of doing that. I guess, you know, the thing a couple of years ago was rewarded video ads, where you were choosing to watch an ad because you were getting some of the in-game stuff you really wanted. The other thing you have to remember, talking about China, you know, an enormous amount of time spent playing mobile games and downloading mobile games is from kids, you know. I mean, they're just voracious consumers of content.
Yeah.
And obviously, they don't have credit cards. So, you know, even if unless you're foolish enough to give them your credit card, I suppose. But we've all been through that experience. The next phase, because I would say this, wouldn't I, with my blockchain hat on, is how you sort of bring in stuff like NFTs into that. I mean, no one's really done that in an ad model yet, but clearly you can kind of see conceptually how that sort of stuff would play out, assuming that Apple and Google allow you to do that, which they may not. There may be some sort of digital asset that you can own. Advertisers increasingly not telling us to go and buy toothpaste or a new pair of trainers. It's much more brand advertising now, which is sort of very loose in terms of how that can be integrated into the game. So the whole thing is that flywheel is still really buzzing.
And I think that came through very clearly in the advert. It's a hybrid model. You know, that it's no longer one size fits all. Everything has to be free to play and we just have to put up with it. You know, I think there are far more opportunities for developers and publishers to pick not just a model, but a variety of models that work for them and work for that specific game. You know, in the last few weeks, we've had speakers at various events, we've had roundtables looking at the whole notion of in-game ads, both visual and audio. And, you know, that's an additional layer that can be introduced without, you know, interrupting or removing any of the other kinds. So I really do think it's an opportunity for developers, and it's a big extra tool in their toolkit. And of course, you know, be rewarded for what it is they're producing.
Yeah, I think audio ads is a good one to bring up there. Those are much harder to integrate, I think. But yeah, you're not fundamentally there. You're not going to interrupt what's going on in the game. Definitely think, you know, in 5 years' time, the audio ad business, or potentially could it be as big as the interstitial ad business?
It is going to be fascinating to see how this all unfolds and evolves. And one of the other key things that Imran mentioned was the idea of cloud gaming and using cloud gaming as a way to incentivize and encourage people to play your game before they download.
The problem for the games industry is, and this is a sort of for any new technologies, it basically has a view on what a game is. And then if a new technology comes around, it goes, how can I put that new technology in my game that I make? You know, the innovation comes when people go, we've got a new technology. How can we make a different sort of game? When mobile games came out, basically people were putting Super Monkey Ball on a phone and selling it. That was fine. Some people liked that. But the innovation happened with free-to-play mobile, and suddenly you made it much more accessible and you made a different sort of game. 2.5 billion people go, thank you very much, I'll have some of that. The problem we have with cloud gaming is basically people said, you don't need a console anymore. You can just stream this AAA game. And clearly that involves a lot of bandwidth. And if you don't have consoles, they're very unlikely to have enormous amounts of bandwidth to be streaming Destiny. I tried to stream Destiny on Google Stadia. And I got fast internet normally. And it was not a good experience. With streaming, that's much more about interactive experiences, really. You know, you're not trying to stream a console game, I don't think, for most people. This is not a big market for that. But it's kind of funny, for Beyond Games, I was looking at some stuff the other day, and it was, I don't know, probably you are a fan, Brian, but I certainly wasn't. You know about Pentakill?
Yes, I do.
Because you know about these things. Pentakill is the in-game band for League of Legends, and they've just done a new album, and they sort of did it with this big sort of interactive launch and CG characters playing this big sort of stadium gig, and it was all amazing and whatever. But then interspersed with that, they had these little interactive sort of elements. you know, where people were in teams and they could just basically very simply sort of interact, and you saw which team won and that sort of stuff. You know, that was just enough for people who were really into this band. Now, would someone call that cloud gaming? Maybe not, I don't know. But clearly that was enough extra interactivity for it to be sort of useful. You can imagine over time that's going to get a bit more complex.
You cannot look at the game sector and say it is only console and PC. They're the real games. Everything else is just, you know, wasting your time. There will always be purists. There will always be people who want to define, you know, this, what I do is real gaming. Everything else is hobbyist. But the reality is that there are so many different areas of gaming, so many new types of experience which are absolutely interactive, absolutely digital, built using games technology, but appeal to, you know, an audience that may never, ever have a PC or a PlayStation or a Switch. And I think that's incredibly exciting. You know, for me, this is one of the most interesting areas of the future.
Yeah, I entirely agree.
Well, again, we'd like to thank Imran and Facebook Audience Network for coming along. As always, we would like to remind you about some of the events that we have coming up in the Steel Media family. So on Monday, September the 27th until October the 1st, you would be very welcome to join us at our next flagship event, Pocket Gamer Connect Digital Number 8, where you can hear from over 250 of the industry's leading experts, analysts, founders, pioneers, developers, publishers, funders, financiers, you name it. It's the place to be. And of course, the place to be seen. And as part of that, we also have the Big Indie Pitch, which this time around is focusing on PC and consoles. So developers, independents, part-time creators, if you have something that you would like to pitch to an industry panel of experts and people who can give you feedback and potentially help you find publishers, Tuesday the 28th of September is the date that you are looking for. As always, before we sign off, we would love you to get in touch and hear your feedback, suggestions for guests or topics, comments on what we've discussed so far. Our email is podcast@pocketgamer.biz, or as always, you can find us on Twitter with the @PGBiz account. And if you like what you're listening to, if you're finding this interesting, fascinating, useful, riveting, or simply an alternative to reading the site, please leave us a review on your podcast service of choice. You can find links to everything that we've discussed in the article that we'll post to support this episode. And the show notes will have links out to everything, including the Facebook Audience Network report that we were talking about earlier. It just remains for me to thank John very much. As always, John, you have been fabulous. Thank you out there for listening. We really appreciate your time, and we'll be back with you in the next few weeks with episode 6. Until then, goodbye.